not about eliminating jobs. It's about allowing people to do more important things, because the typical mundane things that need to be done are going to be taken care of by technology. And I think that's where the concern is, but I think that's where the opportunity is.
Welcome to another edition of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast, where we talk about the business of sports, media, disruption, innovation, all different kinds of things. I'm Joe Favorito here at the end of April 2024 on a beautiful Friday with my co-host Tom Richardson. Tom, we are getting the end of yet another semester, one with quite a few twists on campus.
Yeah, we'll probably stay away from that part of the conversation. But yeah, it's been an interesting few weeks. And but I was there the other day and it was relatively calm and quiet, which was nice to see. But Joe, I'm still kind of marveling at what I witnessed. We all witnessed last night, where there's the now yearly equivalent of sports Woodstock, which is called the NFL draft. When they showed those the sky shots, you guys see this?
250,000 people.
Unbelievable. Yeah. For a
to
draft.
Do nothing. By the way, for nothing going on.
I know. So, I know. Or something going on, but something that's quite predictable, particularly in the first, you know, hour or so.
And the NFL, you know, other people have talked about this, but spring football is not the UFL. It's not the CFL. It's the NFL. And
yes,
they have a series of non-events that they've made into massive events, from the combine to off-season workouts to now the draft, which are larger than life experiences where people have become destinations. Now, and I'm sure you, and I know you've done this, having seen like the ballroom of the Hilton with 35 people sitting around,
right,
to what it's become, even when it was a Radio City. I mean,
but then they were talking about the origins in the theater at Madison Square Garden.
Theater at Madison Square Garden.
How modest it was. Yeah.
And then going to Radio City when we did our Lombardi stuff, which was the first time, one of the first times the NFL actually let other people go on stage towards the end. And to what it is now, where it is orchestrated with fans literally have to be there from every city that are brought in to do special events. And it is now 1:08 on Friday, which begins, oh, by the way, round two.
Right.
Explain to me why they need 10 minutes between picks when they already know who they're picking.
Yes.
It just goes on and on. But
it's called the attention economy drama that they're building.
Credit the NFL. And by the way, also credit to the NBA and the NHL for great starts in playoffs. It's a great time of year, NWSL, Major League Soccer, and of course, baseball and everything else that is going on.
Yeah, but Joe, one more thing about the draft. I'm sure you noticed this. Roger Goodell kind of let loose a little bit last night, personality-wise, for the first time. And it was an interesting move, because obviously this serious mode of just coming out and getting booed year after year wasn't working. And I was watching, and there were two parts of it that really were striking. One is, if you're in Detroit and you walk on the stage with Eminem, you're good.
Yep.
Because he's a legend and loved universally by folks in Michigan. So that was a smart move. And then the little video thing they did with the back and forth with the players, I thought actually was pretty clever. No commissioner has done something like that before. So kudos to the NFL for pulling that off.
Much
better opening.
And the fact that they had 9 Lions legends, and I would imagine it would be hard to find 9 Lions legends, all come out at the beginning as well.
Yes,
so it was, again, massively orchestrated. As I said, it is now 1:10 on Friday. I just happened to notice that the commissioner of the NFL is going on with Pat McAfee now live.
Wow.
So maybe he'll go on with Howard Stern later, and we'll kind of see where that all plays out.
Yeah, between Bill Belichick on McAfee and
and
Roger Goodell, this is crazy.
And you had Nick Saban too in the middle of the whole.
So, yeah.
Anyway, all right, let's get on to other stuff, Tom.
Yeah.
So, for anybody who's listened to our podcast, we like to have futurists on every once in a while to tell us not just where we've been, but where we're going. And our guest today has been some places, including on the basketball court. as a historic member of the return of NYU basketball when the Vaulted Violets returned to play in the 80s, and has continued that tradition along because his son is currently playing professional basketball in Israel, and has really kind of followed through. And but he's had a really interesting career on everything from tech measurement, where we are going. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence. Has had some really interesting stops on, and it's a really interesting POV on the fan, the consumer, brands, and what actually works and what is kind of BS in the marketplace. So Gary Warrick, welcome to the Cusp Show.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Gary, so why don't you just do...
Good. You come sorry, to Joe, my
yeah.
Go ahead.
That's okay. I think we were going to say the same thing. Why don't you just take everybody through a brief recap of the experiences you've had in media, marketing, measurement, and AI, which is your big focus over the last few years and your current passion, it seems like.
Sure. Yeah. So as you can see, sports has been in my DNA from the very beginning. From being recruited to play college basketball. Funny story. I will tell you that I was actually offered a scholarship by Tubby Smith, who was the assistant coach at VCU back in the day, for a guy by the name of JD Barnett. But that's another story for another day. So basketball in particular, but sports in general have been in my background and my DNA from the very beginning. I was very, very fortunate enough to while I was at NYU to run into a tremendous young gentleman by the name of Barry Neuberger, who was our SID at the time, and this is kind of a leads to some of the themes throughout, you know, hopefully today's conversation about you know, advising youngsters who want to get into the industry, et cetera. And I had always told Barry just to keep his ears open because you never know what was going on. So while I was playing, he knew somebody who was hiring an intern for this, you know, fledgling retail organization called Foot Locker. And that's how I got in. Foot Locker had a couple hundred stores when I started in the early, in the mid 80s. And I left there after the internship, started full time and spent almost 10 years there doing everything under the sun. And when I left, there was about 2,500 stores worldwide. And so we opened up Europe. We did made for TV events, did athlete endorsement deals, did all the sponsorship deals with the leagues and the teams. So really grew up in an era where, you know, we had all the money, we had the ideas, we were breaking new ground, and allowed me just to grow tremendously inside the organization. One of the last things I did there was ran the brand, which was called ITZ, which was Bobby Hurley was the endorser back then before the accident, which allowed me to work with Sonny Vaccaro and Peter Moore and Rob Strasser back in the day when they had just left Nike. And so tremendous opportunity for me. Left there, went over to the other side of the table and started to chase the money by representing the NCAA and college athletics. And so learned to sell sponsorships by selling basically logos and marks that the NCAA was offering for their corporate marketing program. Did that for a number of years and then took a flyer back in the dot-com era and went to a research company that was pioneering the capability of doing measurement using the internet for scientifically based research, right, from a sampling perspective. And so that was pretty cool. Opened up, started the sports entertainment practice for a company called Harris Interactive. Opened up the product by creating the research supplier category for the USOC back in the late 90s. And so had some Olympic, experience there as well. And then got into the measurement side of things and went to a company called Simmons Research that was media research and consumer-based research. And they did a deal back then with a little company you might know called MasterCard. And MasterCard had all the actual transaction level data. Simmons Research had all of the consumer-based research. And I went in to manage a product category or a division of the organization that integrated the two. So we're going to get to the AI conversation shortly, but back, you know, 25 years ago, this was the forerunner of integrating disparate data sets, creating, segmentations using large language models to be able to understand how to communicate with consumers and target them. Did a long stint, about 13 years with Experian on the marketing services side, learned a credit business, learned a marketing services business, learned a database and data append business. And then went to Rentrak, which was TV measurement, and went Rentrak was consumed by Comscore. And so I was involved in running sponsorship measurement along with TV measurement for a number of years, brand equity measurement, et cetera. So parlayed all of those different diverse background opportunities, different industries, into always carving out a spot within a bigger organization to be able to understand how to work with the media, work with the agencies, work directly with the brands, providing services to the media landscape. So after that, and most recent, I spent the last 12 months or so working for an AI company. AI is obviously the hottest thing these days, and went in to organize a sports entertainment practice within a public AI company called Veritone. And we were able to talk to the marketplace and educate them on how to use AI in a variety of different ways. And we can talk a little bit more about that. Everything from TV production efficiencies to licensing video content to synthetic voice and voice cloning. It runs the gamut. And so I've had the opportunity to be immersed in that space at a very, very cool time. And we can talk a little bit more about that. But that's the long-winded version of my diverse background. I've got the outline of a book that I'm working on that can go deep into some of the experiences of all the athletes and the teams and stuff that I've had the privilege and honor of working with. But that's me in a somewhat of a nutshell.
So Gary, somewhere in a drawer, do you have like all the devices that you've had from when you started? Like there's a dial-up, there's a rotary phone, a PDA, a BlackBerry to, now obviously using AI and it's got to be sitting somewhere, but I guess we'll get to the stuff on your shelf later. The question I had to start was, can you explain, and we talked about this at breakfast a couple of days ago, when people say in sports, especially say AI or artificial intelligence, what's real and what's the education process like?
It's a really great question, Joe, and the it really needs to be pulled apart. It depends on the perspective you're looking at, right? If you think about AI as a consumer, right, it's how does the consumer interact with AI? And what everybody knows as a consumer is ChatGPT, right? It's vesting you as a consumer to have tools at your disposal to be able to then go do things, right? It creates a whole lot of efficiencies. That's one view. Then we can talk a little bit about generative AI and the difference between AI versus generative AI, et cetera. But then you look at the supplier side of the equation, right? I mean, you're a TV production crew, you're a team, you run a social media platform. How do you use AI within each of those individual verticals? And so it's not a one size fits all, right? Where we had clients like, a baseball team who has 75 years or more worth of video content sitting on, VHSs and Betamaxes and all these different tapes sitting in a warehouse or in somebody's garage. Well, there's extreme value to those tapes now, right? With social media and the ability to push all that stuff out into the marketplace, but you don't know what's there. And so what AI allows you to do from that perspective is to be able to digitize all of that content, use the AI technology to be able to categorize it or put metadata on the actual video, and then house it in a platform that allows an editor or an intern, quite frankly, to be able to go manipulate the machines and be able to find needles in a haystack within seconds. Then you can start to take that and push it out into social media platforms, into in-game, Jumbotron programming as trivia, if that's how you want to monetize it. And then you can also start to look at how do you license that content out. You know, someone wants to use a historical athlete in an ad campaign. Well, now you have all of that footage at your disposal to be able to do that. Otherwise, in the past, you know, Tom, Joe, you're old enough to remember, you used to have to sit in an edit studio and you used to have people look at, you know, run the tapes and run the reels and start to log everything. I mean, like, that stuff is going away, right? That's one view. That's just one view of where AI helps the sports industry.
Joe, this is reminding me of a pod we did, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago in person, Teachers College. Remember sitting with Danny from WSC?
Yep.
I'm sure, Gary, you know WSC, a major player in the sports business. And the idea of automating video highlights, which was so radical at the time. Again, this was probably 18 or 19, Gary. And we were all amazed by this. I actually had Danny visit my class. Yeah, Danny, really nice guy. And I don't even know how much they were using the letters A and I in their discussions. If we go back and listen to that pod, I don't even know if it was mentioned.
I would bet none.
So, Gary, what you're describing is the kind of the latest iteration of technology that's been around for a while, but it's getting way more sophisticated with these LLMs.
It's getting more sophisticated. It has been around for a little while. It's getting much more sophisticated. The models are advancing to a level where, you know, when I started doing this stuff 10 years ago, you know, to find a particular logo within a piece of video, you know, you were at about a 60, 65% accuracy rate. Models are now being built to be able to get closer to that 90% rate. And so you're never going to be able to get everything by, you know, by automation. But what I just described is one component of AI, right? I mean, you know, you look at all of the technology companies out there, the hardware technology companies. You've got companies out there that now, you know, youth sports has been crazy. You can have everything is streamed because you've got AI-based cameras that sit up at mid-court or in midfield, and there's no humans involved anywhere. And now all of a sudden you can stream everything, you know, all your youth events because you've got AI-based technology within a particular camera. Again, that's a separate view from an AI perspective.
I'm sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to one way to think of it is to break it down between consumer products and consumer experiences and enterprise or B2B. So obviously Veritone was an enterprise company. You'd go to the San Francisco Giants or the LA Chargers. You'd present these opportunities. You get a deal, et cetera. And I think one way, this is something we distinguish in my class, with any new technology, there's always the question, well, what does this mean for your business if you're in the sports business, team, league, media company, et cetera? And then what are the implications with the fans, with the viewers? So can we just talk about the other side of the ledger for a minute on the fan side? Because we're seeing people now experimenting casually with ChatGPT. I use Perplexity on my iPhone. These are still imperfect products. The amount of hallucinating is kind of scary, actually, with certain topics and questions. But where do you see the consumer applications going the next couple of years?
It's a really good question. I couldn't sit here and tell you, I give you a really good solid answer. I can give you a couple of case studies or usage. I break it down into two areas from the consumer perspective. You've got the ability to leverage the technology as a consumer versus using generative AI to create something.
Right.
Okay. Right. If you just take your iPhone now, I don't know about the Android side, I have an iPhone, but if you go into your photos and you type in Nike, there's AI in your iPhone that will pull out every logo inside of your library of photos with every Nike logo or every Nike word or whatever it is that you put into the search bar. That's AI. That's a consumer value, significant value for a consumer to be able to leverage the technology, right? That's different than, you know, hey, ChatGPT, write my resume for me, right? Big, huge difference, right? So the technology usage as a consumer for everyday life is just going to just it's just going to continue to explode. You're going to have efficiencies. One of the things now is, George Pine just wrote an article about it the other day. The amount of streaming services and the amount of content that's flowing into a consumer at the moment is ridiculous. Not only is it getting ridiculously expensive to be able to follow your sports team because they're now putting content out on multiple streaming platforms, but how do you find it? Well, now there's technology from an AI perspective that's being built to be able to, curate all of the streaming platforms by program, so that as an individual, as a consumer, you can now push a couple of buttons and understand what's playing where on what particular platform without even having to have, subscriptions to all of them, right? That's technology. That's AI. That's convenience. That's an efficiency for consumers to be able to use. Those types of things are going to continue to come at us at light speed.
So,
That's just
Gary,
an example of the difference.
could a league right now actually look at this as an enormous new business opportunity if they kept things under wraps in terms of proprietary content and access? So let's just take the NFL with a massive archive from NFL films, obviously all the games from the last whatever 70 years. You think about everything they're getting from their digital products, all of their broadcasts, their social media, et cetera. Could a league essentially build a moat around its own quote LLM and kind of keep all the AI business to itself, so to speak, in terms of the potential monetization? It's not to not and by the way, that would be independent of any enterprise usage for video capture, whatever.
Right.
But I'm just kind of
Yeah.
curious what the leagues end up doing with this, because to let it go to OpenAI or Google or whatever, they've already gotten screwed once by big tech in the search game and never made their fair share of the value, got their fair share of the value. So I'm wondering if there's some strategy right now being developed as to how you actually get your arms around this more carefully.
So let's talk a little bit. I'll answer the question as sideways manner. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between open source chat GPT type technology versus closed, right? So when a consumer goes in and wants to use something like chat GPT, that's been built by an open source by everything scraped off of the internet for the last whatever many years. So if you're going to go use that, your data and your query and all the things you put into that is going to go in and going to be part of the open source component. Where the technology has gone and it's continuously going quickly is to be able to create those types of large language models like a ChatGPT, but only curated or only pointed at your own data, right? So from that perspective, the capability of a league or a data owner or content owner to be able to run generative AI like programming or models against their own proprietary data is here, right? That's the way you protect and you leverage your own component. The leagues have the capability, all of the content owners have the right and the ability to monetize their own content. And so that's come out in a couple of different ways. There are a handful of companies right now that license or have the licensing rights to archives. Right. So Veritone has some, Catapult has some, IMG Replay has some, and they do a deal with the content owners, a league, a team, whatever it is, and they run some sort of AI technology so they can query the database quickly, and then they actually proactively go out and sell those rights. So if someone is producing a documentary for Bill Walton, doing a 30 for 30, and they want UCLA footage, the organization who owns the licensing rights for UCLA is the one who makes that transaction. The school gets a cut, the conference gets a cut, the selling agent gets a cut, and the documentarian goes off and does their stuff, right? So that's the way to particularly generate incremental revenue from footage and archives that are sitting around in a warehouse somewhere doing nothing. Right. So that's a big piece. That's a big opportunity for all of the league to be able to start to do that now. One of the challenges, just as an aside note, one of the challenges in the industry right now is a lot of that footage for the long, you know, the longstanding leagues and teams are on tapes and machines that are going away. And the technicians who know how to run those machines aren't around much and aren't going to be around much. And so, you know, there is a need and a time frame of which folks who want to start to cash in and curate their archives better start looking in their garages and in their warehouses to start figuring out what kind of tapes and what kind of reels their archives are on. So that's just one component of how to monetize the industry. There's an interesting play here for NIL where AI is playing a big role as well. And it has to do with the monetization in as well. Right. And so, you know, the college athletes need their footage. They can go out and hire their own influence. You know, they can be their own influencers. They can shoot their own stuff. They have the proprietary rights for those things. If they want footage from games that are owned by the conferences or owned by the school, well, then someone has to curate that. Someone has to be able to get the permissions for that. Someone has to sign the waiver. Someone has to pay for that, right? So there are companies out there, tech companies out there that are providing these types of platforms that are doing deals with companies like WSC to be able to then do that clipping, be able to provision those athletes and their sponsors to be able to then go to market and make money off of their likeness, right? All of this is exacerbated by new technology. If the technology isn't there, this NIL, in my opinion, the growth of NIL is twofold, right? One is the fact that it's now no restrictions from the NCAA. The transfer portal has created a crazy market. But the technology is now there to be able to take advantage of it in an instant.
Gary, touch on off of that, the human component of this. We've all been around long enough to know that every technology is going to come along and eat everybody else's lunch and put everybody out of jobs. And, you know, we're going to be, you know, drooling, just looking around, touching a button and weighing 700 pounds like in WALL-E. None of that's real. None of it's accurate, especially in sports, because the human and the emotional component of sports is different from everything else. You can't sit there and, you know, go take two when, you know, Joel Embiid scores 50 points against the Knicks. How is it balanced? How do you see it being balanced for opportunities going forward for people of any age who are looking to pivot or get into an industry? The things that people should be looking for in terms of skills and adaptability, like you just said. So you need someone to do the licensing. You can't just kind of throw it up in the air and say, gee, I hope this happens. So what are those components that are going to be vital that people aren't even thinking about yet?
So it's a great question. There are a few things to think through. You know, one is you'll hear the AI industry and the technology industry talking about the human on the loop, the human in the loop, and the human out of the loop. There's, you know, it's a common phrase these days, right? And we're in the era of, you know, there's a human in the loop where the human is actively involved, but there's technology, right? We're kind of in this area where the human is on the loop, where the machine and the technology is doing the majority of the work, but the human has to be there. You know, Tom, you mentioned the hallucination. You're talking about, you know, the verification, you know, aspect of things. You just can't set, you can't set a machine off and just expect it to be accurate, you know, at least not yet. And then there's the human out of the loop, which is that you don't need any humans involved, right? And there are things like that now, right? The camera example I gave you, you know, somewhere in the back, someone's pulling the curtains, but at the end of the day, there's no camera person on that camera shooting a game. And so from that perspective, Joe, you're going to see various different, new jobs and new skill sets become, you know, into the marketplace. You know, one of the things right now that is getting a lot of buzz is a role called a prompter, right? You all have played around with ChatGPT. What you query, how you prompt the models is something that people are going to have to learn, right? You know, the more discreet you get, you know, there's becoming an art and a science to asking the right questions and prompting the right technologies to be able to get out what you want, right? The more descriptive you are on the front end, the better your results are going to be. Well, that's a skill that's starting to be looked at the college level. And certainly, you know, in the industry of, you know, you had loggers, you had data entry people, when databases were a big deal. Well, now you're going to have some, you know, certain roles that are going to start to come forward. That's just one that's getting a lot of traction.
Until AGI replaces those people.
Well, you know, it's an evolution. So, yeah. But the other part of it is, you know, when you do a major event, historically, you all have been in the trucks. You've all been on the grounds of the media centers of these major events. There has historically been a boatload of PAs or part-timers who are just, you know, doing grunt work and logging and labeling and all of these different, you know, part-time jobs that need to be done in order to be able to put content into a format that can then be utilized by the producers and the directors and et cetera. That group of folks ultimately are going to go away at some point, or at least be altered. But that's going to free up and create incremental opportunities. It's not about eliminating jobs. It's about allowing people to do more important things, because the typical mundane things that need to be done are going to be taken care of by technology. And I think that's where the concern is, but I think that's where the opportunity is.
Mm-hmm. Gary, for sports specifically, do you think this becomes another sponsorship category? Like, we've gotten the official sports, but I mean, a zillion designations for the leagues and the teams. Will we be seeing deals later this year or in 2025 where OpenAI becomes the official AI partner of the NBA or something like that?
I may get into trouble, but I would say it's already there. Right. I mean, AWS is one of the larger sponsors these days, certainly in Formula One. They're a sponsor of the NFL.
NFL,
right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
right. But leagues, as you know, are expert in, as they say, slicing the bologna ever thinner. So you could say, hey, we have our cloud sponsor. We have a new category of cloud sponsor. It's called AI, and you will be fine with that per our contract, which did not invoke the name of AI 2 years ago or whatever.
You know what I mean? Everything's driven by money and economics. Right. And as long as the AI companies continue to get the funding, and as long as the money is there, there's no doubt in my mind that those categories will be carved out for sure.
Right, but also part of the play for the tech companies, the AI companies, is don't they want to have friendly relationships with these major content owners, like a league? So one way to curry favor would be to work with them instead of against them. Because if you think about large language models related to video, and you say, think of all, well, you can answer this question technically. Is all the stuff on YouTube scrapable for these LLMs?
That's a really good question. And there's a lot of gray area,
right?
And ironically, there are some pretty interesting companies that are being created that are piracy based companies.
Yeah.
And no so surprise. You can now hire or
by the way, there's a shock. Someone trying to make money.
Exactly.
On the back end,
I'm so. Shocked. Piracy.
So there are two that I know of that I've, you know, one I've worked with and one I've become aware of recently. That's what they do. Their AI, their technology can go out and protect your assets. And so they pull down, they have the capability to go into YouTube or right. Facebook or social media platforms and determine what is a legitimate, you know, what is legitimate content governed and sanctioned by the owner of the content and what is not. And if it's not, they have the ability to pull it down.
And this is what happened with Google, with YouTube back around 2007, eight, when they started that whole ID program that the league signed up for to make sure of this very issue. But it seems a little bit more potentially nefarious here, because if it can get into the archives, let's say just keeping it to sports, this applies to all business mm-hmm. and content categories, but let's talk about sports. You think about how much content from ranging from NFL to F1 that's on YouTube right now. And if you could go into one of these available consumer AI experiences and say, I want a video that that shows the 1990s San Francisco 49ers playing the 2018 New England, like whatever, come up with some weird combination. Conceivably, that could be done, I suppose, all based on the real content from NFL films.
Correct. But at the end of the day, what is the usage that we're talking about? Is it somebody who is, hey, I'm a fan and I want to just see that clip? Or is it, I'm a fan, I'm a business person, and I want to use that to make money with? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's where all this stuff is being looked at very, very carefully. You know, just because it's out there and it's in public domain doesn't mean someone has the right to make money off of it. But it's out there in public domain, you can enjoy it as a consumer.
And right, so but it just feels becomes, like, yeah, but you never know the intent of when it's out in the open, out in the wild, as they say. That's right. Kind of my point. And it goes back to my earlier question, Gary, about how the leagues might approach this more holistically as a potentially billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar aspect of their business going forward in Web3, like getting ahead of this more so than they did with. You think about the early days. You know, we were all working in the business in 2005 when YouTube launched. I was at AOL, and we were so focused on professionally created content, we didn't realize that user-generated video was going to become this big deal. No one did, obviously, of course, except for Google that bought YouTube smartly for a song. And it just feels as though at this time around, there's a way more sophisticated approach and attitude coming from the leadership and management ownership of these leagues. There's more private equity involved. There's just more tech people involved, the Leontises and the Cubans, et cetera. Like, they're not going to let this happen. So, that's not necessarily a question. It's just kind of a thought I've been having lately. Like, they've got to get their arms around this quickly, I'd say.
Yeah. So Tom, I'll there are many, many, many smarter folks out there than I to be able to answer your question directly, but I will answer it this way. There are the latest craze at the moment in the tech space right now is these incubator programs or these accelerator programs. Mm-hmm. And there are a handful of companies that have created an organization, I think of it as a holding company that goes out and finds best in breed startup technology companies, mostly point solution type companies, and then represents them to the league or the broadcast network or to whomever. And so it's becoming fairly crowded. Again, public domain things, right? There's a company called Hype Sports out of Tel Aviv. There's a company called Comcast Sports, Sportsnet or whatever the Comcast NBC Universal have. They have their own accelerator program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Accelerator. You've got MLS just announced last month that they've created their own. NBA's had the Launchpad program for years.
Right. And sports programs, sport radar with Accelerator. Yeah.
Yes. What they're doing. So I don't know if this actually answers your question, but it's a tangential comment to it, is that that's what the leagues are doing. That's what the broadcast networks are doing. That's what the industry is doing, is we don't have the bandwidth or the intelligence or the capability or the time to sit down and go figure this stuff out. We're going to hire somebody who's already done the work for us, and then we're going to find the right solutions to solve our problems and or hire the right consultants to come in and right. advise us to be able to figure out what to do.
Right.
Because all you have to do is go to NAB and, you know, walk the South Hall and walk the West Hall at the convention center in Las Vegas And there are thousands of these tech companies now that all have some sort of a technology or an AI component to solving problems, to creating efficiencies, to creating revenue generating opportunities through technology. That it's no wonder people are trying, you know, organizations are trying to figure out how to get smart about this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting moment in time. Gary, just related to that, the business model on the B2B side, the enterprise side, seems pretty obvious. It's a SaaS, I assume it's a SaaS model for most of these companies.
For most of these companies, it's a SaaS model. What you're starting to see, though, is some customization, analytics, consulting.
Right.
There's a gap here that needs to be filled, right? These smart AI technology companies, in my opinion, have the responsibility and the opportunity to educate the market. And they're starting to do it through some consulting engagements.
Right. So on the other side of the coin, on the consumer side, I listen to a lot of tech podcasts. And one of the big conversations, I'm sure you do too, is about, okay, what is the business model on the consumer side? We all know that there's going to be B2B options, enterprise versions, let's say, of OpenAI and things like that, ChatGPT. But on the consumer side, some are speculating, some of the bigger thinkers, that this is going to turn out to be like the search business in early 2000s, where, okay, we're going to give you free stuff, free content, in this case, AI-generated information, and it's going to be monetized because you've got all the elements of monetization you'd want in an ad model. Obviously, interest, intent, specific names, et cetera. And then you just feel like, okay, well, if that's the future of this from a consumer standpoint, it's going to be like the search business redux, meaning it kind of gets bastardized as we see with Google search return pages and things like that. So, but any sense, do you have any thoughts on that on the consumer side, like where it could go? Could be subscription?
I do not think we know. I do not think we will know. I think that it's just, we are so far on the front end of this thing from a consumer's perspective. The technology changes hourly. You know, when you start to look at the ability to, for companies to create large language models, to be able to solve particular problems, very discrete problems, you know, it used to take months to do that. It now takes hours to do that. Right. And so I don't have any idea where this thing's going to land. What I believe is that those consumers who choose to engage will figure out how to make their lives easier, infinitely easier. And like everything else, we'll have the ability to focus on other things or do other things. Mm-hmm. Because the technology will just provide efficiencies in everyday life that no one ever thought would be possible.
I guess the question is, will we as consumers be willing to pay for that privilege via subscription? Or are we just going to be slapped in the face with a bunch of ads while we get that information? There's only really two options when it comes down to it. That's the irony.
Look, people are spending three times as much today on streaming services than they spent on their basic cable. So I have no idea.
Yeah. And they've added a lot more advertising to it and continue to do so. So there you go.
One more question before we get to our last three, you're aware of. You touched on this early on, spoken word. David Levy wrote a piece this week for Sportico where he talked about Kevin Harlan being heard with the same intonations, you know, in 50 different languages before too long. Some of the early adoptions of this look a little bit like Max Headroom, where you can't really see the mouth moving. How valuable is that? And how soon do you think, if you project out next year at the Super Bowl, 2 years from the Super Bowl, where you'll be hearing Iron Eagle in 17 different languages, and it sounds like Iron Eagle actually speaking those languages?
Great question. So I'm going to answer it. I'm going to give you a crazy answer. The flip answer is it's here. It's being done now. There are a couple of companies that I think AWS just announced they did something in the German Football League and the Bundesliga for around soccer in three different languages. You gotta remember that the 27 different languages, the 50 different languages, right? Like at the end of the day, there's really only a handful of languages that are universal that can be universal, right? You don't need 200 languages to be able to do this. The other thing that people need to understand is that it costs a lot of money to be able to do this, and people just aren't willing to pay the bill yet. And the price hasn't come down enough to be able to do multiple languages. You got to build a model per different language. You got to build a model per different intonation. And so the costs start to add up about trying to produce this type of stuff. But IBM did something to the Masters last year. I think they did something again this year. There was some stuff in tennis that's been done. Some companies are out there that have actually had the ability to take raw level data. So a race sports radar, a stats perform data that's coming off the field or the pitch at an instantaneous level and match that with synthetic voice. That's getting better. You don't even need a human anymore. The challenge with some of that stuff is there's too much dead time. So when you want to listen to it from an audio perspective, and the ball goes into the stands and they're waiting, 4 minutes to throw the ball back in a soccer match because they're on the sidelines and there's just dead time. Well, there's nothing there. So you've got to program that, which then costs money, and then who's going to get involved in all that stuff? So Joe, the short answer is it's coming quickly. But to me, the real question is who's willing to foot the bill? Right? I know that the bigger leagues, it is a humongous, without naming names, it is a humongous initiative and priority, let's just say for the majority of the big leagues. They're intimately, aggressively trying to find the solution, right? Because now you go, Tom, now you go back to the conversation we had about WSC and the ability to generate highlights instantaneously coming off of a game and mid-game during the game in an instant. Well, how do you then take those highlights and send them back to the host country of the European player, right, before the game ends? That it's all here. It's just going to continue to take time to get perfected. And so you have to ask yourself, can you launch this without letting perfect get in the way of good enough? Or do you have to be perfect because that's what the consumer is expecting? And so that's kind of where we are. We talked a little bit about this on a panel I did at Sports Business Journal Tech Week a couple of weeks ago. It's here, it's just not perfected. And somebody's going to make a decision of do you launch it in beta and almost good enough, or do you wait? And then the real question is, how do you get it funded?
Joe, I'm thinking we have like two more years through this podcast where we actually have to speak as Joe and Tom.
Right.
And then
Just read it out of my
synthetic
head.
voice,
Television
AI,
replaces.
we'll
I will
have
tell you.
toned.
So, Tom, I will tell you, I will give you an example of where this is actually taking place right now.
Great.
If you think about the ability to clone a voice, there are systems out there where you can go do it yourself on its own platform. And it's a self-service platform. So you can go do your own. In the industry where this is becoming, for not I should say pervasive, but where it's getting traction, if you think about advertisers and agencies who need to cut multiple ads because there's state regulations, like in the gaming industry,
Yeah, like yeah, sports betting.
and you need your celebrity to sit in a studio and do voiceovers, those days are gone. You don't need to do that anymore. You clone the celebrity's voice, you run a script, you're done. That's where that efficiency takes place. But again, it's got to be done in the right way. The celebrity owns their rights, they own their voice, they have consent, they sign off, everything's above board. That's easy to do, right? You've got other areas where celebrities are cloning their voice from an estate perspective. So now when somebody passes away and you still want to be able to use that voice from the estate and the family, they now have control over it. And they can decide where it goes. They can do promotions, they can do ads, they can do documentaries in a controlled environment with permissions, et cetera. So yeah, the voice piece, Joe, is it's here. It's going to get better as time goes on. But there's a humongous downside. Humongous. And going into this political climate and this political time frame is you're going to start to see it more and more, and that's a problem.
Yeah. Wow. Boy, lots to think about on
Okay.
this topic.
Tommy, want to take us to
My
our final grade?
head
The
is
happy
spinning.
note will go out. So, yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, it's really interesting, and I think what's fascinating, Gary, just as a final thought on the main convo, is that we talk in my class about the origins of the internet in the 90s when things changed for everybody, when the commercial internet became available, beginning of Web 1, transition to Web 2 with mobile, UGC, etc. And it really does feel like we're on the verge. Well, it's not really on the verge. We've started a new era with all new kinds of challenges and opportunities, some good, some difficult. And I think the best thing, it's a good transition into our final couple of questions. In fact, we'll start with this one. We know one of the concerns about AI is that it will take away a lot of white collar jobs. And that is actually mentioned in the use cases that I read on Veritone for a couple of their deals, which is understandable, for logging videos and things like that. Offer up some career advice, especially to young people listening in this new era that we're embarking on with an AI element affecting all parts of the biz.
Okay, so I'll give you a couple of things. Just in general, my advice to young students is very simple. You need to read. Just read. There is no excuse with the amount of information that exists today not to be somewhat involved or educated or aware of whatever topic you're interested in or you want to pursue. And so I read. I constantly read. I read everything from, the Sports Business Journal to Front Office Sports to on the tech side, there's a group called SVG that publishes a something every day.
I follow them.
There are many AI newsletters now. There's a really good one called Superhuman AI Insights that's fantastic. And so just read. And you don't need to just read industry stuff, just read. The other piece of it is don't be afraid to fail, right? There's you're going to fail. You just are. We all do. Don't be afraid to fail. The other piece of advice I give to all folks I talk to, especially the young folks, is never let your position dictate or determine the type of person you are. I've been in so many organizations where, people had high level positions who thought they were the bee's knees, and then when they left, no one would talk to them because they were a bunch of jerks when they were in that position because they thought that that's who they were, right? Just be nice. Just be nice. It's something that gets lost in this day and age with this. Look, I've got, my boys are 32, 28, and 24, so I'm in it. I know that market pretty well right now. Just freaking be nice. But as it relates, Tom, as it relates to the AI piece, the more you read about individual verticals and how those verticals are interacting with AI, to me is really telling. The advertising agencies are handling it one way. The TV networks are handling it another way. The sports leagues are handling it one way. The up and coming sports leagues are handling it in a different way. And so the more you can focus in around how the diversification of AI is being implemented, I think the more you'll become educated and start to be able to pick apart and see the complexities to it. At the end of the day, let's not kid ourselves. Generative AI and AI is very, very simple. It's creating efficiencies. It's really what it comes down to. It's really freaking complex. But at the end of the day, what is it? It's the ability to create an efficiency using technology.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. Hey, Gary, our last question, because you covered the two kind of together, is the most fun one. So look around. Tell us the tchotchkes and the what's on your shelf you've collected over the years.
I will tell you, Joe, I am the most fortunate and humbled person out there. I have been, look, I've worked with, so it's funny, real quick, funny story. Someone asked me to create a fun fact, right? Everyone says, what's your fun fact? And so I thought about it for a while and I went back and I looked at it. And I have worked with, in some capacity, some more than others, with over 35 members of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Which is interesting, right? I've spent time, I cherish my time with Coach Wooden. The stuff in the back is Wilt Chamberlain, some of his stuff. Spent a lot of time with Wilt. We did a lot of work with Deion Sanders. I love what Deion's doing in the market these days. He's just exploded. And done a tremendous amount for our student athletes. What else is back there? We did a lot of work in track and field, and so the long jumpers and folks like Gail Devers and Joetta Clark and that ilk. I'm trying to think what else is back there. I'm looking back there. The big marquee event that Foot Locker did was this slam dunk contest with professional athletes who weren't basketball players, and so through that I got to work with a lot of the NBA legends. Joe, we talked a little bit about Cal Ramsey, who was one of my dearest friends. Cal brought us and brought me in particular into, working with Julius and Havlicek and Walton, and the list goes on and on and on. So, a lot of that you see back there, but two that are pretty cool back there is one you can't see, which is the one that the picture that's on the credenza is actually my father playing table tennis with Bo Jackson. So the ability
That's pretty good.
to bring my father around to some of these events and have him meet some of these guys. And he's played golf with some of the coolest athletes, which was just tremendous. And obviously the flag you see over there is obviously in honor of my dad, who passed recently or a couple of years ago, was was in the service for a little bit. So that's kind of my little group here. And then the one other one is, Joe, you mentioned my older son plays, he's finishing up his 11th year as a pro overseas playing hoops. So, one of those is from his very first college game. So
Wow, good stuff.
that's what's there. And then there's a whole other stuff. Oh, the one there, yeah, the Bobby Hurley, the in the zone shoe is there when I, worked with Bobby and the
Wow.
family. So, yeah, Danny and Coach and Chris and the whole family, I worked with them, still pretty close with those guys as well. So
Cool.
treasure my history, understand how privileged I have been to be able to be in this industry, which is why I'm going to continue to stay in it in some capacity.
And a reminder to all young people that if you want to, and kind of finish off your career the latter years with really good memories and mementos and tchotchkes, better off being in the sports business than being an accountant, I suppose, because everybody ends up with some really good stuff. It's really fun. But
Yeah,
Gary, nice job. Nice
it's
job on
kind of
that.
funny, but no, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's been great, guys. I thank you for the invite. Hopefully,
Hey,
this is
Gary, before we let you go, where can
yes,
people
sir.
find you? Most importantly. So.
Where can they find me? LinkedIn. All of my contact information is on LinkedIn. My cell's there, my email's there. I'm happy to help wherever I can, and I'm always looking for good opportunities. So
Awesome.
that's where I am.
Well, thanks, Gary.
An
Really
open book.
appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
All
Talk
right,
soon.
Joe, that was
So
fun.
it was
AI,
fun.
AI,
And
boy.
a conversation about AI with humans. How great is that? So,
And on
Yeah,
the next episode,
next time I'll
right.
bring my synthetic voice into the conversation so we can
I think we should try an episode, Joe, of our synthetic voices. And if they look at, since we, Gary, we've been doing this like 8 years, so there's hundreds of episodes. And if an LLM goes in and picks up everything we've done, Joe, they probably could predict what I'm going to say or what you're going to say and the dad jokes and everything. So maybe there's an opportunity to use some synthetic voice and get some of that efficiency that Gary was talking about. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Gary. We really appreciate it, Joe. Thank you. Thanks to all for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.